is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer depository service. Been in business about 20 years. Coins Plus can be reached at 444-0044 in Spokane, outside toll-free, 877-TAP-COIN, 877-827-2646. Again, remember the Spokane number. You can just put the prefix in front of 509. It's 444-0044. And always through our website at coinsplus.com. Coins Plus, real lifeblood, is helping people preserve and protect their wealth, preserve their capital, preserve what God's given you, what you're responsible as a steward for, helping you to conservatively, biblically make wise financial decisions. We're here to help you, you know, do the right thing. My belief, honestly, is that the paper markets are a lie. They're a big fabrication. People are buried in those things. You are so rare to find somebody who makes true profit in those things. I've been around the money world for many, many years, decades plus, too long. And I know how it works now. It's a big scandal. You see the Dow moving up. It's an artificial index. They literally, folks, remove and replace stocks on a regular basis. You can't hardly document what they've done without knowing how to. They do everything in their world to cover it up. There is a lot of scrubbing that goes on, even from Google's perspective. If you're trying to locate a historical record of what's been there, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. And so many times, if you'd have bought the same stocks as the Dow had 10 years ago, you'd be, you know, you'd have basically half of them left because the other half have been changed out, and you would be down in the toilet hard, even though the market's up. And this goes on and on and on. I remember back in the 80s and 90s, there's a financial magazine called Kiplinger's, and Kiplinger's had their, I don't remember what they were called, their gold pick stocks and gold pick mutual funds or something like that. And someone went back later and did a comprehensive research on that and proved that you would have gone bankrupt twice if you followed their lead. And yet this is what brokers do. Brokers don't have a crystal ball. They don't have a magic wand. They don't know more than we do. They, you know, they don't know. They're just guessing. But to them, they're no different than a car salesman, folks. A car salesman doesn't care which car you buy on the lot. I take that back. He does care a little bit because some cars have more gross profit in them than others, and he will steer you towards a used car over a new car any day of the week because the gross profit on used is so much better than new. But the point is that they're profit motivated, and so are brokers. Brokers love to sell you these complex investment vehicles. Mutual funds are beautiful because everything's packed in and hidden, and you might not know what a mutual fund is. A mutual fund is basically where they accumulate a barrage of stocks, a large portfolio of stocks, and what they say is, oh, it diversifies your investment. And, you know, they say basically it's like you know, rising markets raise all tides, or they've got some saying. So if you have all these different stocks and the market goes up, you're going to rise with it. There's a touch of truth to that. But in reality, when you look at even what the average stocks are doing, you look at what the individual stocks are doing versus what the Dow as an index is doing, it's folks, it's really hard to explain. If you take in the period of time that the Dow Jones has gone up 15%, the average stocks that are sitting there right now or have gone up about a little under 8. You're like, that can't be. How is it? Because they remove and replace stocks. They use weighted moving averages. They use idealism. A guy in the Wall Street Journal years back it was actually USA Today, did an article on the S&P 500 tracking the stocks in the S&P 500, and the people who invested in him, they have an investment index and the index that shows in the newspaper. Okay, well, the investment index actually realized losses and realizes stock conversions within the index. And he, at the end, he said, boy, I'm confused. The average investor in the S&P 500 last year made 1.3%, but the S&P 500 went up 7%, okay? So his conclusion, rather than – he was so close to the truth. Rather than saying, what in the world is going on here, he said, well, I'm just going to conclude that people must buy high and sell low. And that's why people that invest in these indexes do poorly. He no facts to support it. He just said, well, this doesn't make sense in my mind. And he walked in with an assumption at the start that was wrong. And what that reminds me of is, I don't know if, you know, many of you that watch movies, but there's that M. Shyamalan guy. He's a director, producer, maybe a writer. He did movies like The Village, which was a great movie you got to watch. It's a basically about a kind of a cult that moves into this area. I won't tell you, but there's a monster like thing, and that they're afraid of. And at the very beginning, they, if you watch the previews, and you should before you watch the movie, because they put your mind exactly where the people's minds in this cult is, and you make a big assumption that is absolutely wrong from the start. And based on that assumption, you are walking in the shoes of these people who are being deceived until finally you see where you made the wrong assumption, and it's very obvious. He has another one called The Visit that does the same thing, where these kids go to visit their grandparents, and there's a big assumption at the very beginning you make that's wrong. Well, this is the same thing. And you, what happens is it's like a magician. A magician, you look at a table and you assume that table is a thin table and nothing could fit inside of it. So they play with optical illusions where you can't see the depth or thickness of the table. You assume the table's 2 inches thick or whatever, and therefore you assume a body disappeared. No, it's because you made the wrong assumption. That's why magic works. That's why it fools you. And this is the same issue with the Dow Jones Industrial Average or any of these other indexes. Annuities are another classic. I've talked about these, folks. I want you to understand annuities in general are the poorest form of investment out there. They have a fee structure that is packed 3 feet deep. The salesmen of annuities make the largest commissions in any financial sector in existence. Mammoth. 30, 35%, 25%, you know, it's huge. It's just huge. And then you get into this, and the thing is, you're not really making whatever return. People always think they make 7%. Here's how it works. They say, well, we're going to put you in the NASDAQ fund. The NASDAQ has been returning an average of 7% a year over this period of time. They throw you a chart. You don't notice that the chart goes from 1995 to 2000. And they say, well, that's what the return on the NASDAQ's been, and that's the fund we're going to be in. And you think, oh, I'm making 7%. No, they don't tell you. Well, the way we calculate and amortize and use indexes and margins and highly discount and take out fees, if the NASDAQ did go up 7.5%, you're going to get 0.5%. But if the NASDAQ doesn't go up, you're going to lose money. And so, by the way, they don't even mention that to you at all. And they especially don't mention the fact that it's not really your money anyway, because once you're an annuity, you can't get your money back out. And you, well, and then you think, well, I see, I'm incorrect. You can get it out with mammoth, massive surrender charges. The other trick they do on annuities is these bonus premium or premium bonuses. This is the big thing on all of them now. So you give them $100,000 or whatever, and they give you a 10% premium bonus. So now you show $110,000 on your statement. Oh my gosh, look, Henry, we gave them $100,000 and now we got $110,000 just like that. So, and then they, when you're getting your 1% interest, you're really getting 1.1%. because you're getting 1% of your premium bonus. That's the purpose of the premium bonus. They always intended to pay you a 1.1% interest or whatever, but instead of just saying, here's your 1.1, oh, it's better to give you a 10% phony premium bonus that you will never, ever, ever have. You can never touch it. There's no way to recover it. Any time that you go to touch your money, it evaporates. It's gone. You can't grab it. It disappears in your hand. It literally is untouchable. You can't have it. No matter whenever you reach it, it disappears. It's pretty unbelievable. And you have a choice with annuities. One, you can get out early and you pay substantial surrender charges. You can just continue to roll it and keep getting phony statements and it looks all good. They want your money forever. They don't want you to get out. Now, if you get to the point where you're like, man, I've had that annuity forever. I'm retiring and I need money. They say, you know what? That is perfect. You don't take out your annuity. No, no, no. You annuitize it. They do not want you to ever take it out because if you take it out, oh no, you got all these surrender charges again and your premium bonus vanishes. But now we have a special program where we can annuitize your money. And it's a great program because you're going to get, because the, you know, they're going to say prime rate right now is only 1.75%, but we're going to pay you 4.75% on your money. And you're like, well, that's a bargain. Let's do it. You let them annuitize it. Now you sign a bunch of documents, your money's gone. The premium principal, gone, gone, gone. Your principal's gone. You'll never see it again. But they show you that they're going to start to give you payments. And those payments are amortized based on an actuarial mortality table, which means a statistically calculated table based on how long you're supposed to live. This is truth. I actually had a doctor tell me. He said, we looked at his annuity. He had been robbed. And he goes, well, my family lives a long time. He goes, I had a great uncle. He lived till he's 105. He goes, and I plan on living till I'm 105, and I'm going to beat those sons of, you know, watches. And I said, are you serious? I said, that's a great strategy. You have to live till 105 to basically break even? So, you know, doctors are oftentimes really good at what they do, but there's a saying that they make money in medicine and lose it in business. That's an old saying I learned in banking because first of all, when doctors go to college, everything they learn is absolute. It's black and white. It's firm. You do it this way. And it works. Now, if it doesn't work, things happen. There are statistics that are outside of your control. But they learn that you cut like this, you do this. It's repetitive over and over. It's black and white. They don't understand the salesman. They get paid. Doctors get paid. And granted, I'm not going to sit here and tell you doctors don't turn their practice into a big money-making business or any of that. And there's doctors that are probably entrepreneurs and everything else. But they just have a really hard time going and understanding that a broker's not doing the absolute best they can do for them. It just baffles them. They don't get it. I've seen it so many times, and we deal with them all the time. And you know, bless their hearts, but we do our best we can for them. We treat everybody at Coins Plus seriously as if it was a relative's money, friends. I mean, it matters to us. People want to blow and go. They want to come in with a substantial chunk of money and walk out. And we're like, no, we're going to take that money. We've got multiple packages working all the time. We have daily meetings and we literally discuss the customer. We discuss the age. We discuss our understanding of the asset base. We discuss what other assets they have that are associated with our industry, precious metals, coins, things like that, real estate. We talk about 401ks, IRAs. We work with the whole package. When people call up and go, hey, what's a really good investment today? There's no such thing. It depends on you. It depends on your goal. Are you investing for your grandchild's college education? Are you investing for your college education? Are you investing to buy a house in 3 years? Are you just putting your money aside because you need it in 6 months to pay taxes? It totally depends what you're doing with your money. And that's why sometimes we'll ask questions that are a little bit personal financially, but that's the only way we know exactly how to help you the best. And we do go, it's important to us. I'll just tell you that. But the annuity thing, folks, I'm telling you, it is just a robbery in getting your money out of those things. I mean, it's one thing to go to your broker. Brokers rely on relationships. They thrive on personal connection. And so people go, well, my broker's kind of a friend. Well, he seems like it because they're trained that way. I met a guy when we were in Hawaii that was the schmooziest guy you'd ever met, and he was super annoying. And he was up at, we were at the Four Seasons at Lanai. Lanai is one of the islands in Hawaii that has only two resorts on it. They're both Four Seasons. Bill Gates has a condo there. I guess he's got them all over. His dad lives there. Bill Gates actually visited for a day while we were there, and he laid by the pool, and he had a girl that did everything for him, and she was very good. She knew every single preference that he had, and she handled phone calls for him, and it was kind of impressive to watch. But anyway, we were in Lanai, and this guy was toting around. He was a broker, and he was just working everybody and trying to buddy up to everybody, acting like the nicest guy you've ever met. And then he was talking to me about how he wanted to open a brokerage in that hotel, and because, you know, so much money goes through there, and it was kind of nauseating. And then he proceeded to tell me the story about how, and I find this very manipulative, but he did research on the musician Jack Johnson, who I like his music. It's awesome, fun, kind of Hawaii lighthearted music. And he did research on Jack Johnson. Then he found out who his parents were. He knew Jack was from Hawaii. And he figured out where his parents were. He figured out where they had a beachfront home. And then suddenly he started taking his family to this location in order to manipulate, I guess. I don't know what the other word is, in order to create a false chance meeting with Jack Johnson's family. So then he did a real estate investigation or whatever you call it, title checks, and found out that their family has a beachfront property that they rent out once in a while. And then he, you know, of course, he goes down this whole process to track them down and act like he just randomly meets them on the beach. He told me all this. And then, you know, stumbles upon the conversation that they're looking for a rental, and oh, by golly, they rent. And so him and his wife end up renting Jack Johnson's parents' condo on the beach in Hawaii, and eventually they find out, they talk to him all the time and find out when they're meeting with Jack the next time, and kind of he stumbles in and says, oh, by, you know, coincidence, I'm going to be having dinner at that same restaurant that night. And he basically worms his way in to meet Jack Johnson just specifically for the purpose of trying to get business from him, which apparently didn't work out so well. But I thought, wow, that's amazing. The actor Matthew McConaughey did a similar thing. He wanted to be an actor. He had very little experience, if not actually meaning none, and he wanted to be an actor. And so he did research on producers and directors, producers mostly, until he found one who had a son about his age. He moved to the city, to the area where that kid lived, and then began a process of befriending the son of this producer and eventually meeting the producer, begging the producer for a part in a movie, got a part, did pretty good at it, and then began to get more parts from this producer. And today he's a famous actor. So needless to say, just because a broker is your friend doesn't mean he's really a friend. The Bible says there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother, meaning that's a true friend. A true friend is somebody who sticks by you through thick and thin. We've all had good times. We've all had bad times. And I'll tell you what, the bad times get rid of the chaff. When your life sucks, I guess we'll say, as a Christian, that's not a very nice way to refer to it. But there's times life's tough. Those times when God's chastising us, disciplining us, helping us grow, that's when we get stronger, you know, and when, because we know that, you know, the sunshine comes in the morning, glory comes after sorrow. And those times are when your friends scatter. You know, you can see that a little bit with Job. You can also see with Job, He had some real friends, but they hung around and they criticized him and said, look, man, you're making God mad. What are you doing? You know, they had to blame him. There's no way that God could just do what God did for God's glory or God's purpose, you know, the big picture. And how, yeah, it's just interesting that way. So, enough of that. The point is that brokers are not your friends. They're, you know, that's not what they are. There might be some that are okay neighbors or whatever, but just they all want to be your friend if you have a little bit of money. And then when you pull your money out, you will face and experience severe rejection. I've been doing this a very, very long time, and I've seen women cry on numerous occasions. I've seen women especially take abuse. I've seen weak men actually get talked out of moving their money out before big crashes in 08 and 09 and before the metals took off and they could have made a fortune, but they just didn't have the courage. They wanted the guys or the broker to accept it. I've had many, many people, mostly women, tell me, I've got to convince him that I need to buy these coins and metals. He won't agree with me. And I said, he never will agree with you. He's got his financial well-being at his, you know, is his primary driver. When you have money invested with a broker anywhere, I don't care if it's your 401k IRA or whatever, they get continuous, constant, repetitive residual income. It just keeps coming in. That's why brokers brag about the size of their book. There's two ways they make money. One is churning, which is a no-no word in the brokerage industry. But that just means when they buy and sell and buy and sell. The other way, obviously, bringing in new accounts, which is selling new stocks. But the other way is residual income, when it just sits there. That, you know, the stocks pay them a dividend, or a management fee. Mutual funds or classics, they pay them a management fee. The company uses the money, they get interest. There's all kinds of things. They want your money. And when you come to biblical investing, gold, silver, livestock, real estate, you know, precious stones, things like that, and you've got to understand sectors. We were just looking today at a friend of ours who's an older gentleman. We call him the godfather of the Morgan dollar. He's a gentleman who's now in his 80s. We were looking at ads that he used to run back around the early 70s pertaining to Morgan silver dollars. He was at the time selling coins for $200 that are now worth $10,000. He had coins in there for $135 that are now worth $5,000, you know, and on it goes. Unbelievable, you know, unbelievable, frankly, the returns that have been posted over time on, and especially the better material, the better. The more generic material, like uncirculated Morgans, which are $50 to $60 now, in the 70s were $2.60. These things have well outperformed the precious metals base. That's why we sell balanced portfolios. And you have to understand that your level of comprehension does not dictate the value of an investment. Okay? Think about it. Just because you don't know about what beachfront real estate in a certain part of Kauai, Hawaii, doesn't make it a bad investment. And what I mean by that is sort of people have a general understanding of gold and silver, and they come in and they want a, you know, a basic type. They want bullion, and we'll say, you know, that's good. But if you're putting in a chunk, which a lot of you do, we want you balanced, okay? But it's people have a resistance, and it's a comprehension thing. In some cases, it's an IQ thing, because the higher the IQ of the buyer, in other words, you know, the higher professionals that are, like I said, doctors or, you know, engineers and things like that, they are a lot more receptive to the concept of variation often than like a food service worker would be, or just a union member. I mean, it's just a fact. And so you have to have an understanding of expertise and realize that I've been in the financial industry 25 years, hands-on, and a lot of people just think we flip-flop precious metals. This job is the single hardest job anyone would ever have. It's one of the most intellectually demanding jobs on the market. We had a new kid start here a while ago, and he said, I see the world differently. He said, I absolutely notice everything. My mind is analytical. It's, you know, it's problem-solving all the time. I'm far more aware of my environment than I ever was, and that's because in our industry, you're constantly dealing in coins. You're listing stuff online all the time. Every coin's different. You have all these numbers, 1878, 8-tail feather, VAM 132, Morgan silver dollar reverse of 70-79, or whatever. There's so much detail that you have to understand, and you've got pricing parameters, and you've got all this information, and every coin is different. No two are alike, and you never, ever stop. And basically, it's a sharpening. So when you add that on top of our experience with investing in 401ks and IRAs and tax laws and, you know, all the variations in products available and which ones have reasonable premiums and which ones don't and what the performance is and what the upside is, I don't mean to overcomplicate, but we do all that for you. And if you're like, well, I don't know, it sounds awfully busy to me. I talked in the last show about the importance of honoring your mother and your father. And I can tell you that what I'm describing now, I've done for both of my parents. My father, I built an extensive coin collection that, you know, he paid me what the coins were worth at the time. And then over time, he did incredibly well. My mother has a portfolio. It's mixed. It goes from bullion, semi-numismatic, and numismatic coins. Over time, it's done incredibly well. But I'm saying if it's good enough for my parents, and I honor my parents based on the biblical commandment, it's good enough for you. So that's why I said early in the show, we treat you as if you're our relative. It really is that important. I'll also tell you, with all the ship rocking going on in the U.S. right now, the Titanic is not on stable ground. There is, you know, everything going on out there is troubling to me. It's just concerning. We've had Trump's trying to do his best. He's not totally prepared for politics. He doesn't understand, you know, like that, you know, the healthcare bill that got shot down, basically. I mean, they pulled it, but it got shot down. Primarily, I think, because the House Freedom Caucus refused to cooperate. So now, of course, the left-wing media, whenever you see the left-wing media tell you that a conservative is the most hated group and, you know, they're obstructionist and all, that should be your first sign they did something right. The House Freedom Caucus, all they really wanted, it's a tough, tough deal because all these Republicans have run for 7 years saying that they want to repeal and replace Obamacare. I am convinced that Donald Trump walked into Obama's office and made a compromise agreement with him that he would not allow those uninsured, now insured under Obamacare, to go uninsured. In other words, he promised to keep them insured. The problem is that is all that Obamacare has done is insure the uninsured. It's destroyed everyone else. Just like Bill Clinton said during the campaign, he said, it's the craziest thing you've ever seen. He said, premiums have doubled and coverage has gone in half. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. That was Bill Clinton. And then, of course, they tried to walk it back and say that's not what he meant, but that's what he meant. The Obamacare is a disaster. So now, you know, the left was foolish because they really, I think, the smarter ones wanted the Trump care to take it on, to take it over. They wanted the Republicans to get the blame shifted because it's a mess. And they wanted, you know, there's been so much criticism of Obamacare and the left has blinders on and they've got all on all their, you know, their dishonest narratives and all this stuff and their agenda. I guarantee you the minute that the right, the conservatives, got a hold of that exact same health care, then all of a sudden they would have had a very thorough understanding of its shortcomings. They would have immediately began to slice and dice and tell you everything that's wrong with it when suddenly, you know, or beforehand they were unable to even comprehend that there was anything bad about it. They want to leave Obama's name on it so bad. So basically Obamacare is imploding, aka exploding. It's going to blow. Financially, it's not self-sustaining. All the insurance companies are bailing out. We're coming up for another renewal period of insurance companies bailing out. It is going to self-destruct. So it may be a good thing that that went down that way. The Freedom Caucus wanted Trump to keep his word. They wanted premiums to go down. You know, they wanted cross-state line trading to give a free market enterprise. And none of that was included. And then we get the, oh, that'll be in the second and third bill. And, you know, basically you need to pass it to see what's in there. All the things we criticized the left for doing, Trump's crew did. Paul Ryan's proposed bill that he's apparently had 7 years to work on was a disaster. I mean, frankly. And so here we are. So Trump is the first president in the history of the United States to crash and burn on his first attempt at making drastic change, especially relating to one of his most primary campaign promises. No president in history has ever done this before. So bully business tactics don't work with politics, okay? And think about what I'm saying. People say the left, the media, CNN says bully tactics are the problem. No. Politics is the problem. Lies, deceptions, people that say one thing and do another. The problem is Trump said, look, you guys have until whatever time to vote on this, and then I'm pulling it and I'm done. And then guess what? He pulls it and he's done. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You don't do that in politics. You make false threats. And then when your threat doesn't work, you say, just kidding. Kind of like Obama's red line with Syria. You know, if you use, you know, gas or on your people again or chemical weapons, that's a red line and we're coming to get you. And then he does it. And we, you know, that's not really a red line. It's just an idea. I was hoping it'd scare you, but it didn't work. Dang it, you're smart. You know, I mean, folks, we've got an interesting number of years ahead. We've got kind of a cluster on Capitol Hill. We've got a bunch of Republicans that are very confused. Why are they confused? It's very simple. Because every one of them at some level has adopted a certain level of socialistic mindset, democratic thinking. Our government has become more and more permeated by socialistic concepts and thinking. We have become highly socialistic. It is an extreme situation. Let's be frank. We have a problem, do we not? It's getting completely out of control. So there's a few different things I wanted to talk about today. And I think that one of them I'll touch on is the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights of the United States is the 10 most potent, important, undeniable, irrefutable rights that are a critical foundational component of the United States Constitution. What that means is simply this. These are the top 10 list. This, you think about it, hey, top 10. This is what our founding fathers did. These are your top 10 rights that you got to have for this system to work. The first thing you got to understand, folks, we are not a democracy. We are not a democracy. A democracy is where the people vote for whatever they want, and it's all about emotion, it's all about impulse, And democracies always self-destruct. They always end in tyranny. Always. Democracy is a transformational form of government. Our founding fathers were brilliant political philosophers. They knew far better. They created a republic, a hardcore, firm, non-negotiable, irrefutable set of laws, rules, and regulations. We are a land of laws. This is America. Just like if you're a believer in the Bible, there is a firm set of laws you should abide by, live by, respect, and so on and so forth. This is America. This is where we've gone off the rails. Now, the 10 Bill of Rights. Number one, the First Amendment. The First Amendment is the freedom of speech, press, religion, and petition. Okay? I'll read it to you, but I'll tell you first what it means. The First Amendment protects our right, the people, the citizens of the United States. Remember that. In most cases, the First Amendment, first of all, protects anyone on our soil. And secondly, it's our belief that this is a civil right that is due every human being on earth. These are what we call inalienable rights. They're necessary. They're built in. They're cooked in to God's creation, okay? God gave us free-thinking minds. He gave us the ability to speak, to articulate, to learn, to debate. There's a reason, because we are to go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. You're going to have to speak and talk and debate, and, you know, all that comes into it. So the First Amendment protects our right to practice our religion, any religion, parentheses, that we want to, parentheses. Now, here's what I meant by parentheses. The First Amendment should protect our right to practice any, quote, unquote, religion. There's a problem. We have a religion called Islam. Islam forbids freedom of religion. Islam at its root and at its core says that if you do not believe as they believe in Allah and Muhammad, you are an infidel. And if you're a Christian or Jew, you automatically are not Islamic, and they can slaughter, maim, and destroy you. So we've got this new, all these new factions of Islam, these new peaceable Islam, this new, I heard this guy talk about the other day that, you know, the non-radicalized Islam, where people, you know, they're just going to have to start to form factions of Islam that are not producing radicals. Okay, well then you cannot read your scripture, you can't read the Hadith, you can't read the Quran, because that's where it's coming from, in and of itself. Our founding fathers made it crystal clear after Jefferson and Adams went and met with the Pasha of Tripoli in Tripoli, which is why the song for the Marines says to the shores of Tripoli, because Jefferson got ticked off after going through this meeting. He was like, why are you doing this to our people? They were absolutely capturing our citizens on ships to Europe back and forth and turning them into slaves and killing them and raping them and terrible things. So Jefferson and Adams went over there wanting to have a man-to-man talk, going, why are you doing this? We're a brand new nation. We don't have a problem with you. The Pasha of Tripoli was very quick to explain to him that they're infidel scum, or that we are, and that they are ordained by Muhammad and Allah, the god of the moon god, basically, from Baal worship, and that they have every right to do whatever they want to us, and we have nothing that we can say about it. Jefferson came back and said, I've had enough of this. Congress was shelling out 20% of our yearly budget to bribe the Muslims to not hurt our people, and they continue to do so, and Jefferson was fed up with the cowardice of Congress. Sound familiar? So he ran for president one, and he established the first U.S. Navy with the strict purpose. Now, this is top secret, because we could never say that the first war we fought with our Navy was against Islam, but it was. We went out and slaughtered and maimed and kicked some tail, and we used a little bit of pig's blood. Yes, that's true. They covered them in pig's blood. They slaughtered them. They decapitated them. They did everything to them that they'd done to us, and we sent witnesses back to Tripoli to tell them clearly, if you touch our people again, we will come to the shores of Tripoli. That is why the song of the Marines, which our first Navy was called the Marines. That is why that song has that phrase in it. And they were called the Leathernecks, because if you look at their uniforms from the very start, they had big, thick, like quadruple hardened leather, quadruple sheeted hardened leather that went up above their ears, because the Muslims fought with big old bayonet or machetes, and they just went to chop your head off all the time. So they were Leathernecks. They had these big, big leather collars. So that was a little bit of a sidetrack, but the point is, Islam, I'm sorry, folks, to be politically incorrect, but Islam does not coexist with other religions well. Look at how they don't integrate into other societies. They segregate in violent ways. Not only do they segregate, they have their own law. It's called Sharia law. It's a law based on Quranical, you know, medieval standards. They want to bring everybody back to the Dark Ages. What scares me the most about this continuous rise of Islam is that they will go to any extent, and they're starting to get engineers and, you know, and architects, and they're starting to try dirty stuff. My concern is if they ever touch our power grids, we will go down hard. And folks, I don't know if you even understand the power of the power grid and the power of destroying it. From everything from sewage and sanitation, you know, to your garbage, to your drinking water, to food in the stores, to transportation, to communication, everything would be dead overnight. And they could do that in such a fast, effective way that it would literally destroy us. And then you'd get severe disease, and you'd get mayhem, and, you know, people... Everybody watches these crazy zombie movies, which I think are terrible and ridiculous, and, you know, where everybody's running around shooting everybody. But, you know, it's kind of funny how science fiction has its own little form of prophecy. And zombies are not real. They never will be. It's completely stupid. And it's unbiblical. Humans have souls. Humans have life. Life comes from God. Beings cannot have life without God, period. But the point is that just the rampant shooting and attacking and, you know, maiming, that is something I fear. I fear that we could end up there. Who knows? You know, there's some very potent biblical prophecy about the future that includes, you know, blood to the bridles of a horse. Whatever that means, that's some scary stuff. The numbers of destruction in the Valley of Armageddon doesn't even make sense. And it's not a bad interpretation. It's just an unbelievable number. So long story short on that, Islam cannot coexist because they demand a theocracy. So to continue, it's to practice any religion except for one that actually, you know, constitutes, bad word, the destruction of other religions. It also protects people's right to not have a religion. And now that's the new thing, to be an atheist. Why is it that atheists are so mad at theists? Hebrew or in Latin means without, or Greek, without theism, without God. Why does someone without God hate someone with God? Why does someone without God get offended when someone with God wants to worship? And we are being deceived in this nation by thinking that any expression of religion in public is somehow a violation of other people's rights. First of all, these laws mostly protect your rights on private or public property, publicly owned property, government property first, private property second. Public property is not immune from religious expression. It's just the opposite. And we have spun and pushed and spun and pushed. And this is the single greatest threat to the United States of America. We've got the right to religion or no religion, and to speak freely, to assemble or meet with others over any topic at any time we want. The only issue there that's a concern is if we're meeting with like-minded people who want to destroy the government or do a heinous act, you know, the committing of a crime or the planning of a crime is illegal. We've also got the right to communicate with the government and the press is to publish, which is supposed to be the eyes, ears, and mouthpiece of the people. Now the press has become this radical left-wing, ridiculous, you know, arm of socialism that is impenetrable, very powerful. They call it the fourth estate because you have the judicial branch, you have the executive branch, you have the congressional or legislative branch, and you have the media press branch. Really, let's face it. So the way the First Amendment reads is this. It refers to our freedom of speech, press, religion, and petition. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So, we have, Congress cannot prohibit or prevent us from establishing any religion anywhere at any time that, I have to put this in because it probably wasn't as big of an issue then, that does not threaten the people or the government. I mean, let's face it. If I create the religion of, you know, because I don't like, you know, redheads under 5'2", that weigh over 160 pounds, and I think they should all be eradicated, which is essentially what Hitler did, is he started to practice Aryanism, the cleansing or purging of certain races of people. Actually, believe it or not, that's okay to believe too. It's just when you commit the act that it's a problem. But essentially, like Islam, when they start to plan government attacks, let's face it, there's a problem there. And when they prohibit the freedom of other people's religion, there's a problem there. I was just thinking today how ludicrous it is that they will kill you if you mock or make a joke about Muhammad. On the other hand, there are so many jokes about Jesus, especially around Christmas time, that are so inappropriate and so destructive. There's so much blasphemy that's come out about Jesus being sexually active and being gay. And I'm sorry, folks, these are not my ideas. They're terrible. It's the same concept of what they've done to jeopardize Jefferson and Madison and Christopher Columbus, these people, because they say in their journal, I shared a bed with a man. Well, back then there wasn't a lot of extra space. And sometimes you just had to crash in the same pad as a guy. But it does not mean that you would have behaved in the manner that we now see running rampant and flagrant in front of our faces, which is definitely jeopardizing certain aspects of our world. By the way, if you know, according to the Center for Disease Control and the government census, the number of sex partners of a homosexual male in his lifetime is over 1,000. And that is a very unhealthy lifestyle. So we have the freedom of the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. They can't stop us or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Now think about it. We put up a Christmas tree. Oh, no, you've got to take it down. Isn't that prohibiting the free exercise of religion or abridging our freedom of speech? I believe it is. Or the freedom of the press or the right of the people to assemble peaceably. Now, here, another thing that kind of baffles me here. A little bit ago, we had that author, that conservative author on that campus in Montgomery or wherever it was, where the left children, which is what they are, immature babies, came in and screamed and yelled, turned their back on the guy, and chanted at the top of their lungs for 18 minutes to drive the guy out, and then they tried to destroy his car. They basically tried to kill him. The professor that was trying to help him got abused so bad she ended up in the hospital. The left doesn't care. I even heard this left-wing guy, Richard Fowler, probably one of the more annoying guys. He's about as logical as Bill Maher. Actually, Bill Maher is smarter, I think. But this guy was saying, Well, they have the right to the freedom of speech to do that. I disagree. They don't have the right to do what they did. Why? Because what they did was shut down the author's freedom of speech. Freedom of speech, I don't think, gives you the right to shut down someone else's freedom of speech. Richard Fowler said, hey, that's our right. And they said, what about the rights of the author? He actually said, no, we don't have, he doesn't have a right to speak because what he has to say is stupid, it's wrong, and it makes no sense. This is the mentality of the left. This is where attacking and destroying the Constitution is hurting America. I heard Richard Fowler in another debate with Ben Shapiro basically stating that they basically have a duty to obstruct conservative speech. He said it's conservatives' right to speak, and it's our duty and right to obstruct that speech and stop that speech. Wow, that is not the right attitude towards the freedom of speech. And no one will call him out on this stuff. And this is becoming the thought process of the left. It is destructive. There is no respect of fellow human beings who disagree with you politically. This vitriol is spewing from the left. The right in general wants to debate. They want to use facts, logic, and common sense. For some reason, the left is becoming more and more violent, more and more aggressive. The right is taking the abuse. The right is always the adult in the room. Whether it's in Congress, you know, you look at the behavior of the left since Trump got in, nowhere near, I mean, the response of the Republicans to Obama was nowhere near what we're seeing, folks. I mean, there's just a level, and the media supports them, and it's just such a twisted concept of what's going on. I mean, we are just tolerating the intolerable. And the left is so foolish, they don't understand. They think they're fighting a jihad, and they are. But the problem is, they're absolutely setting up a system that is going to destroy the wrong people. Once they set this precedent, folks, it's coming after you if you are a Christian. This is all designed to build up, to squelch your speech and destroy you, to lock you up. Call me crazy. Our Second Amendment, which I don't have a lot of time to talk about, is the right to bear arms. It protects our right to own guns. You know, it basically says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The well-regulated militia basically meant that if people band together with arms for a cause, it needs to be a well-regulated militia, not a band of marauders. It was saying that we have the right to bear arms, but we have the right to bear arms for the right purposes. Self-defense and hunting is important, but that is not at the core of what that right is about. That right is to protect us against the uprising of a tyrannical government. Now, the left will say, oh, that's ridiculous. You're afraid of your government. You think your government's going to rise up and take your guns. And, you know, folks, we've got story after story of this. Adolf Hitler's a classic. You know, people didn't think it ever happened, and now you've got Jews that are ashes. We've got to take it serious. We've got to take this stuff very serious. Our founding fathers knew the necessity of it. We need to respect their foresight and their wisdom. They were brilliant. We act like they're these old, I don't act like it, but we've heard these accusations that they're old, white, bigoted, rich, slave-owning, you know, whatever. No. They were brilliant, brave men who risked it all to come over here and start anew and basically put their name on a death list with Great Britain. They took the risk of their lives. It, you know, so many of our founding fathers were killed in battle, and their children and their wives, and just the horrors are unbelievable. The British were ruthless. It was bad. The choice they made was huge, and they know the necessity of being armed. You, listeners, had better be armed. Have something. Be prepared. Something that can deliver bullets, not a, you know, one revolver with six bullets and no backup. I mean, you need it. That's what our founding fathers said. Not only did they give you that right, I think they basically handed you the duty. Can you imagine the mass shootings that would be stopped if people would, you know, have guns available, even in their cars? Get a concealed weapons permit, keep a gun in your car, whatever. I mean, we need this stuff. So we're short on time again, but I'm going to try to continue to cover the Bill of Rights. I had another cool thing I wanted to go over, but I didn't have time. And it has to do with the First Amendment, freedom of speech. It's about how to listen. And, you know, it's a stages of listening is listen, understand, verify, and empathize, L-U-V-E. And it's a great listening technique to learn how to listen to people. Because like my wife said to me today, she says, man, I've seen you talk to people that are so fundamentally opposed to you in every way. And I know I'm not going to persuade them. So what I do is I listen. I try to find points of agreement to establish respect. And then over time, maybe they'll ask my opinion and maybe they'll listen. But until they want my opinion, I'm not going to give it to them because they don't care. They don't want it. People want to spew. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion. So, you know, it's more important to be a good listener than it is to be a good talker. A friend of mine was talking about how you can crush people with evidence, and it's like no one converts by having it banged over their head. So anyway, thanks for tuning in again. Call Coins Plus, 444-0044 in Spokane, toll-free 877-TAP-COIN or through our website at coinsplus.com. Get your finances right. Let us help you out. We're good at it. This isn't small peanuts to us. Substantial quantities. We will do you right. We've got a great selection of inventory right now, and we're here to help you. So thanks again. Take care. God bless, and bye-bye.